Okay, now let's come to the next prize, the first prize won, and that goes to Johanna Strobel. She studied medicine at the Medical University of Vienna and concluded her doctoral studies in the PhD program Immunology at the Medical University of Vienna as well, under the supervision of Georg Stari. Currently, she is working as a resident doctor at the Department of Dermatology, again at the Medical University of Vienna, and is a postdoctoral researcher in the Stari Lab, as well as being a visiting researcher at Hanifa Lab, Sanger Wellcome Institute in Cambridge, United Kingdom. And she also received an award before, and that was, surprise, surprise, Researcher of the Month in November 21. So congratulations. And the stage is now yours. Yeah, please come and give your presentation.
Thank you, and good evening also from my side. Today I have the pleasure to tell you about our most recent publication, which is tick feeding modulating the skin immune cell landscape to facilitate the transmission of tick-borne pathogens. And we were quite happy that our study was also featured as a highlight of as editor's choice in the journal Science this month. So before I start talking about ticks and tick-borne pathogens, I want to tell you about the skin immune system and why I find it so interesting to study skin-resident memory T cells. So I started out during my PhD studying T cells in healthy skin and in the context of stem cell transplantation, where tissue-resident T cells actually provide the first line of defense against invading pathogens. In inflammatory skin diseases, those cells can be out of shape and can start an inflammatory reaction, including in graft versus host disease or skin inflammation in the context of polymorphic light eruptions. And finally, those cells can also turn malignant and create tumors of the skin, which are called cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. So now we were interested in seeing what tick feeding actually does to this host pathogen interface and how ticks can influence the skin T cells to facilitate or dampen the response to tick-borne pathogens. So due to the climate crisis and global warming, the geographic areas of ticks as vectors of diseases has been rapidly expanding, in that ticks are now also present in more northern parts of Europe and are expanding throughout Asia, Europe, and also highly prevalent in Northern America. And ticks, when they start feeding on human skin, the interface becomes the site of transmission of tick-borne pathogens, and the tick transmits salivary proteins with its saliva into the skin. And it is clear that the tick tries to improve tick feeding by inhibiting coagulation to increase blood meal. It also inhibits the release of histamine and serotonin to dampen itch and pain in its host and to prolong the period of feeding. But those saliva proteins are also able to inhibit the immune system by inhibiting chemoattraction, or a specific protein, SARP15, has been found to inhibit the activation of CD4 T cells, at least in vitro. So our questions were to answer which skin resident immune cells are affected by tick feeding, whether tick saliva-induced immunosuppression may facilitate the transmission of tick-borne pathogens, and whether it's possible to model tick feeding and tick-borne pathogen transmission in vitro. And for that, we first sampled individuals after tick bite. We sampled the site of tick bite, a healthy skin biopsy, and a blood sample of those patients, and performed microbiologic workup to exclude any infections with tick-borne pathogens, as we focused on the non-infected patients. We followed this with a workup using flow cytometry and tissue immunofluorescence. And the first finding was that actually many of the cells that are involved in barrier defense in the skin are not affected by tick feeding. This is especially surprising for eosinophils and basophils, but also mast cells and other cells that are innate immune cells and actually should have some reaction to this barrier breach. However, there were certain cell types that were highly modulated by tick feeding, and this includes dermal dendritic cells and Langerhans cells, so dendritic cells or antigen-presenting cells of the skin that were decreased in tick bite biopsies, which we attributed to cell migration. And there were cells that were part of a local inflammatory response, including neutrophils, B cells, and T cells. So we next looked further into the T-cell infiltrate and saw that not only do they increase at the site where the tick actually bites, so the most upper skin layer, the epidermis, but also in deeper layers of the skin. And when we further look into the type of T-cell that is increased in those biopsies, we can see an increase in overall in CD8 T-cells and in T-cells of the T-cell receptor gamma delta type. We also saw an increase in markers of activation and tissue residency, meaning that mainly tissue resident T cells are induced by tick feeding. And one of the most important findings was actually that T cells are impaired by tick feeding in that they have less capacity to produce type 1 and type 2 cytokines that are actually important to fight against tick-borne pathogens. This was also mirrored in the response of innate lymphoid cells, which are kind of the counterparts of T cells of the innate immune system, in that they were also impaired in their capacity to produce cytokines, and a certain type of innate lymphoid cells was overall decreased. Surprisingly, we also saw some small effects on peripheral blood leukocytes with a decrease in T cells and natural killer cells, and again, this type 3 innate lymphoid cell, which is important for pathogen response at barrier sites. So next, we wondered whether we can experimentally replicate a tick bite and develop the ex vivo tick bite model, in which we took glands from ticks that have fed on laboratory animals, then extracted those glands to get a kind of extract of tick saliva proteins. We then subepidermally injected this into skin that we received from plastic surgeries and incubated this for 24 hours. And indeed, we could replicate all of the findings that we had in actual tick bites with this experimental tick bites, with a decrease in dendritic cells and an increase in T cells and tissue resident memory T cells. So we next wondered what is the consequence of this tick bite-induced immunosuppression. As you may know, many ticks are infected with Borrelia burgdorferi, which is a spirochetal bacteria and the causative agent of Lyme disease, which can present in the skin as erythema migrans, which is this expanding rash from the site of the tick bite to other skin areas. And we took this Borrelia spirochete, so this type of bacteria, and adapted our tick bite model to mimic Lyme borreliosis in that we injected spirochetes and then incubated our skin explants with those bacteria. And indeed, bacteria did increase towards the 24-hour time points within this skin explants, meaning that they are actually growing within our models. They also interact with immune cells of first defense line, for example, macrophages. So there's also an active immune response within those samples present. Lastly, we combined our two models to mimic both Borrelia infection and tick salivary gland effects. So we co-incubated Borrelia spirochetes with tick gland extracts, as they would in the gut of the tick, and then injected this mixture into explants, followed by incubation. And indeed, when you don't add tick salivary gland extracts, you get a certain replication of Borrelia within the skin. But when you add the tick saliva, the infection is actually increased. And this is mainly due to a decrease in the local immune response after the addition of salivary gland extracts. So to summarize, I hope that I could show you that there's a specific tick bite-induced immunomodulation with an increase in certain immune cells, whereas the overall function and production of cytokines in immune cells is impaired, which leads to the facilitated transmission of tick-borne pathogens. And to conclude, we found that ticks are very efficient pathogen vectors by this mechanism, and they suppress the immune response by the components that are contained within their tick saliva. And lastly, we developed this model to study tick feeding and tick-borne pathogen transmission without the need of a human study subject or laboratory animals. So with this, I would like to acknowledge everyone in the studies that I mentioned, and of course also the funding sources, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Jonah. First, congratulations and really great talk. So I was wondering whether for the ex vivo experiment, if you really need Borrelia burgdorferi to be alive, or did you also use dead or head inactivated Borrelia for these experiments? And then I was wondering also whether you use the same ticks for the salivary extraction for the ex vivo model, or did you check salivary glands from different tick?
Thank you for the questions. So to your second question, we used the same tick for all experiments, also all the same tick type. It's always Ixodes ricinus, which is the most prevalent tick in Europe and in Northern America. There are also studies with other tick species, so amyloba ticks and so on, but we didn't go for those ticks in our experiments. And regarding the Borrelia, that's a very interesting suggestion to see whether also heat inactivated Borrelia may have an influence on the immune response. We did use only active and live Borrelia to allow replication within the skin experts.
Okay, thank you. And may I ask just one more? Okay, just a general question. Do you know if, or maybe there is already something known, about AD patients, atopic dermatitis and also psoriasis, where they have really huge inflammation in the skin? So do you know if these patients have less risk to develop Lyme disease?
Yeah, that's unfortunately, as far as I know, that's not studied, whether they have a decreased risk to develop Lyme disease. But it's an interesting thought. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. More questions? Well, of course, again, I would be intrigued to know how do they actually decrease the release of serotonin and histamine? Do you know?
So I'm not sure if this is clear yet, how exactly they decrease the release of serotonin. For histamine, there are certain proteins that have been identified in tick saliva that binds to mast cells. So this has been found in vitro studies. So not sure if this is true also in vivo. But
interesting. Yeah. And then how do you actually prepare the gland of the saliva gland of ticks? I mean, this is super small, tiny organ.
Yeah, it's very, very tiny. We are lucky that we have collaborators at the Institute of Sciences in Slovakia, and they developed this method to allow ticks to feed so that the salivary glands engorge, and then you can take under a microscope, you can dissect the salivary glands and then homogenize them. But it's very, yeah.
Okay, well then, thank you very much again for your lovely presentation, but also for interacting, the lively interaction. And now we will go to celebrate